We've known each other for like a decade.
Oh, yeah. It's been fully a decade and change.
Probably some more. It's... And then Keely and I almost have known each other for a decade.
You and me, it's going to 12. You and me, it's coming up on a dozen years.
Holy shit.
Exactly.
That's what the fuck?
That's enough years to be eggs in a carton.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, you're absolutely right.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the podcast where we go absolutely cuckoo bananas over our favorite characters from Degrassi The Next Generation. I'm Keely Bell, and you can join me every week with a special guest to talk about how these characters did whatever it takes and how exactly they made it through.
Welcome back! This is Cuckoo Bananas! Exclamation point, a Degrassi, colon, The Next Generation podcast. I am your host, Keely Bell, and I am once again reunited with my two favorite people.
Reunited, and it feels so good.
I don't have the rights to that.
I didn't know that your grandfather and your baby brother were on the podcast today.
You know what? That's what that is.
Oh my god! Wow,
you got me there. You got
special
me there.
Guest.
Wait, who would out of the two of us, who would be your granddad and who would be your baby brother?
Oh no.
You caught me mid You caught me mid sip.
This is the real tea.
Tag yourself. Like
out of you.
Tag
two.
Yourself. I'm Keely's little brother.
Yeah, no, I actually I actually think you're my grandfather, Aaron, and then Daniel would be my brother, because I'm constantly telling Daniel he's my child.
Okay.
Like when I take food from my job,
just call me granddaddy.
When I take food from my job, I go, oh, I've got a kid to feed. It's my
wow.
I don't say it out loud, but I certainly think it.
Wow.
So who are we here to talk about this episode, guys? I'm so excited.
Well, we're
Tony Stark.
We're actually here to talk about our good friend DJ Chris.
Oh, I would love that. We know how much I love one man.
DJ Chris.
Chris Sharp.
Christopher Sharp.
We're here to talk about that one kid that was only in the first season, who had a disability and was in the wheelchair.
Oh, I love her.
Her.
I love her. Oh. I don't know her name. I love her.
Oh, is this an inside group chat joke that I'm privy to?
No, you would know if you listened to last week's episode with me and Alicia.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was where it was from. I listen to episodes I'm not in. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you're talking about. If this episode were a book, it would be a real page turner.
Oh my god!
There
Get
we
out.
Go. Oh yeah, you and your dozen eggs. You and your carton of eggs.
But yes, you're correct. We are here to talk about one Miss Paige Michalczuk.
How many chucks can a Michalczuk Paige?
Ooh.
What?
How much Paige could a Michalczuk chuck if a Michalczuk could chuck Paige? So yeah, we're here to talk about Paige Michalczuk. We love her. Yeah, general opinions on Paige. Like, the reason that there's three of us on this episode is because we all have very strong feelings about Paige, and that is that.
We love her. We stand.
She's the best. Yeah. And Aaron is obviously the best, meaning me, because Keely, tell the audience what you got for your birthday from
Oh,
me.
Yeah. So last year, it was my 2020 birthday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Last year when I turned 25, Aaron Berry, the love of my life, got me a cameo from one Miss Lauren Collins. And it is one of my most treasured possessions of all time.
And doesn't it start off with a new year?
New year, new look, new page. Yeah.
Yeah. She says new year, new look.
New Keely. Yeah. And I cried
I made sure that she knew how to pronounce your name.
So sweet. So sweet.
It was really cool. It was very, very mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, now I've got, so, like, that, so, out of the cast of Degrassi, I've got Pat Mastriani, who played Joey Jeremiah, has acknowledged me on Instagram. We've talked in the comments of a post. Stefan Brogren, who played Mr. Archibald Rupert Snake Simpson, liked my Halloween photos. He liked those. I got the cameo from Lauren Collins. I commented on one of Cassie Steele's TikToks, and she responded to me, and I about passed away.
Oh, I heard you. I heard your spirit leave the physical plane and then have to come back about 30 seconds later.
Mm-hmm. And then this is actually the first time a Degrassi cast member has ever acknowledged me was about probably 10 years ago now, if not more, when Jake Epstein was on the tour of Spring Awakening, and they used to do vlogs called Totally Trucked. And I sent in questions because they would do a Q&A every episode with the cast members. And I sent in a question for Christy Altomare, who most people might know from Anastasia on Broadway. I had sent in a question to Christy Altomare, and Jake Epstein is the one who was asking her the questions. So he said my name. And I was like, oh my God.
Hell yeah.
You've been inside of his mouth.
I have. Jesse, that was when me and Jesse had been friends for like a couple of years. And he and I freaked out together about that. And that was just a treasured memory of mine.
Beautiful.
But yeah, we love Paige Michaelchuk. She is like, I will say Degrassi really does do this type of character really well. Like, mm-hmm. I can't think of a single, like, mean, bitchy girl that Degrassi's ever had that I didn't like. Zoe...
Yeah, I was about to say, Zoe's the one where they kind of fell off the wagon there.
Yeah, but, like, not entirely. I didn't hate her. Like, there are times where I like Zoe.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, yeah, Paige, Holly J, Zoe, they're all, like, such fun characters. Very nuanced, very... they've got a lot going for them, and none of them are ever just like mean to be mean. I mean, Holly J was for like a season, but
that was really fun to watch, and like that's really the common thread here, and they really invented that with Paige, which was like she's always fun to look at. She's always fun to like experience, regardless of if she's right or not. She's always fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. Because Lauren Collins really, she really like, I don't even know how to say it. Like, Lauren Collins really just put everything into Paige. And even when Paige is being like a bitch and being the worst, like, you cannot help but love her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's see if we can sum up Paige's arc in 3 sentences.
What if we each do 1 sentence?
No.
That's an idea. I'll go last. Who wants to go first?
Oh shit. Daniel goes first.
I'll bite the bullet. Okay. Paige Michaelchuk starts the series as that bitch.
Mm.
Period.
Wow. Okay. Throughout the series, Paige is still that bitch. Trademark symbol. But grows into a more mature human period.
Okay. Okay. Easy to work with.
Unlike someone.
In the end, she uses her leadership skills to propel her into the worlds of fashion and Hollywood and all the places she is meant to be, period. Woo, we did it.
We did it. That was super easy. Very easy.
We sure did. I shouldn't have been scared at all.
Your sentence was like 5 words.
Yeah.
And look at that. We made high, beautiful art with those 5 words. Yay me. Thank God.
London Tipton.
Another that bitch, honestly. Yeah.
Her, Paige and London would be an interesting.
They would hate each
other. Oh, 100%.
Paige would like pretend to like London Tipton just for like the perks and
the clout.
Yeah, and London would not understand what that meant.
Yeah, London would be like, "Oh, this is my best friend," and Paige would be like,
"Actually, Paige, Michael Chuck would probably be friends with Maddie Fitzpatrick."
Yeah, I could see that because she likes to be friends with people who aren't just like her.
Yeah.
Because, like, none of her friends, except, like, even Hazel, like, Hazel's the sweet version of Paige. Like, they like all the same things, but Hazel's really sweet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Paige is, like she's not mean. Like, that's, we'll get into that when I get to my first plot point. Because, like, we do need to raise the question, like, was Paige Michael Chuck ever actually a mean girl? Or was she just a queen bee? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I guess we will start with my first plot point. I'm covering her entrance and her exit, but we're going to start with her entrance. So we're introduced to Paige literally in the second or third episode of the series, if you're counting Mother and Child Reunions 1 and 2 as two separate episodes.
Yes.
Which is interesting, like, that we saw Terry before we saw Paige. Isn't that, like, that's so weird.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah, because, like, Ashley and Terry have that little moment in, I think, part two of Mother and Child mm-hmm. Reunion, where they're showing the alumni all around the new school and, like, showing them all the computers and stuff. And then we don't see Paige mm-hmm. until the third episode, which is, I think, Parents' Day, when Ashley and Toby are running against each other, or Ashley and JT.
Family politics?
Family politics, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
When Ashley is running for class president against JT.
Yeah.
That is when we are greeted with the iconic image of Paige Michael Chuck walks into the room in a pair of denim capris, platform sandals, a baby tee that is a sleeveless baby tee that says hottie in rhinestones across the chest, with her little midriff out, mm-hmm. fun sunglasses. Mm-hmm. And she walks into the room and everyone's like, "Oh, wow." And they're like, hi, Paige. And she's like, "New year, new look, new Paige." Or they say something about how her look is like, "Wow, nice look you got there." And she's like, "New year, new look, new page," which instantly, like, that sets the tone for her entire character. We yep. know who she is. We know she is the queen bee. She's the, and, like, it's also, like, implied that she wasn't this before, that she was, like, she had, like, a summer glow up
yeah,
situation.
She had an awakening and decided that mm-hmm. she was better than all of you.
Yeah, which is so interesting. Like, that's so weird to think of. Like, what was Paige like in the seventh grade? I need to know.
Well, like, we all experienced that, the kind of the little girl who was like everyone's a kid. We don't really mm-hmm. get too many of these archetypes right away. But then once mm-hmm. middle school happens, we all remember that one girl who was like, "Oh, yeah, I guess it would make sense that you would become the queen bee." There was just a stark mm-hmm. change. And then all of a sudden, yeah. you're there. And that's... And they really did enter in with the baby tee with rhinestones.
Yeah.
The denim capris, listen.
I had so many pairs of those.
if anyone is wondering my thoughts on capri pants, I do not care for them. But even in a capri pant made of farmer's denim.
Mm-hmm, a dark denim.
A dark farmer's denim. Paige Michael Chuck said, "Bet I'm gonna give you a look that serves," and she did yep. that.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
And it's like, I feel like Paige, like, casting wise, Lauren Collins is such an interesting choice for Paige, because we cannot sit here and pretend that she did not have this, like, adorable little baby face for her entire life. She still has mm-hmm. it. So, like...
Oh, yeah, that cameo, she looks the exact same as when she left.
100%. And yep. so, like, that's one thing that I love about Paige, is that she's not this, like, ethereal Regina George type, like...
Sharpay Evans
type, like, high school, or in this case, middle school... mean girl, or, like, queen bee.
But she has a very distinctive face.
Yeah, she's, you know, she's tiny. She's got the little cheeks. Like she's the queen bee that we all knew in middle school. Like, she doesn't look like this like ethereal being where it's like, ugh. No, she looks like a regular girl who knows about fashion and has the confidence of somebody twice her height. And that's what I love about Paige and how we knew who she was from the beginning, and like her starting the Spirit Squad right away. And like, they were like, this is a leader. This is somebody that the little girls watching this show are going to want to be. They're like, oh my God, I want to be Paige. And then eventually, like a couple seasons later, they would want to be Manny. But that's because Manny then becomes Paige-like.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother thing. But yeah, like, that's how we see her, and that's how she's introduced to us, and it's a precursor for the rest of her time there. And I really love that. I really love how we got to experience her for some of the first times. Like, she's vapid, she's obsessed with her image and getting discovered. Like, that was a big thing in Parents' Day episode. But yeah. So, oh yeah. So we should ask the question. Is Paige ever mean? Like, can we really think in our heads a time that Paige was legitimately a mean person?
Well,
where she didn't like go back on it and like redeemed herself.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So like, we can, okay, let's count. Getting Terry drunk for Spinner's attention, you know, the giant baby.
Yeah, she did that. Mm-hmm.
What else?
She really, remember when she dated JT for a half second and then decided she wasn't dating him in public, and then...
Yes, but I would counter to say that was Hazel and Jimmy. Well, yeah. That was them. They are the ones who made her do that.
Well, yeah, but her tendency to go along with that when... She's still culpable in that scenario. Like,
yeah,
like she wasn't mean on her own, but also her personality is she makes withering comments at people, and they get out of her way, and it's mean, but it's not mean in the same way that, like, I don't know, if we're comparing archetypes, like, someone more comparable would be Kate from Lizzie McGuire. Kate was mean in an active way where she would pursue someone and tear them down for seemingly no other reason other than, I have a bad feeling, so I'm going to take it out on Lizzie today. Paige didn't need to do that. Paige was totally benign, unless you're Manny Santos and decide to threaten the hierarchy.
Who has the next plot point? Should we do chronologically?
Me, I think.
So, yeah, it would be easiest to do
if we did chronologically. Mm-hmm. So I, trigger warning now, if you're listening
to this,
we are now going to talk about sexual assault.
Yeah, this is the one.
So is it in the season two? Or is it in the second
season
one?
Two.
Yeah.
Okay. So season two, Paige and Spinner are having weird times, and Paige ends up going to this party with a bunch of high schoolers. Yeah. And the guy from the other, is it lacrosse?
It's,
why do I want to say
soccer?
Yeah, it's soccer.
Okay. Teen Wolf, maybe? That's
I think someone does play lacrosse at some point on Degrassi.
Yeah, lacrosse shows up, but I think maybe, you know, even Dylan plays lacrosse at one point.
You know who holds a lacrosse stick and never plays lacrosse?
Terry.
Terry?
Terry! Terry! I thought she was playing hockey, but nope, it's lacrosse.
No,
we
it's lacrosse.
Threw her into a sport and didn't do it, not once.
Yeah. But yeah, it's soccer.
Yeah. And then she ends up going into a room with this gentleman, and I think she thinks that they're just going to, like, talk and hang out.
And probably smooch.
And probably smooch, when in reality he ends up raping her.
Yeah.
And that stays with her for the majority of that season, and then it kind of just disappears.
And seasons later.
Really?
It does? when she crashes Spinner's car.
Yeah. The
trial. Yeah,
no. My favorite plot point of hers was the smashing of the car. I love that.
Yeah. But after the trial, it just kind of...
It does peter off, yeah.
It peters off, and she's like... Yeah, anyway. And I think that, like, I think that... That moment probably was fairly pivotal for Paige to kind of like chill herself out
and definitely
take a step back and be like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, and like, I wish that they would have had like, so I don't know if I've ever talked about it on the podcast, but I'm a sexual assault survivor. And like, that's probably one of the most realistic ways I've seen stuff like that portrayed, because it's one of those things where it doesn't leave you and it'll just pop up at the most random time. You'll just, for me, I'll just be like chilling and then all of a sudden I'll have a weird flashback. And flashbacks aren't even just like... like, oh, I'm reliving the moment. It's like, oh, like... you remember something that that person who had done the thing to you said in that moment. And then you're like, what the fuck, brain? What are you doing? Like, I kind of, I think they do like more movie stylish flashbacks.
They do.
Literally reliving the moment, which happens.
Or she like, I know she has that dream about Dean in the bathroom.
And that happens. Like, I've had dreams with my sexual assailant where it wasn't the actual event, but he was in it, and I woke up and I was a mess for the entire day.
Yeah.
I would get him bad too. Like, that was very, I'm also, we're in the same club, but they really did a good job layering it in where it wasn't her whole personality afterwards, because that's what is often so terrible about when they do it on TV. It becomes the whole character's thing.
Yeah.
And especially since Lauren was of the age of the character, she wasn't a CW teen, she was a teen.
An actual teen,
They were, I think they did a really good job of not giving the job of speaking for all sexual assault survivors and all their experiences to a 14-year-old girl and have her carry that for her entire career. They peppered it in enough where, like, it was still relevant and the writing was such where you can see the character change, like you said, Erin, but she didn't have to carry it the entire time, which I really appreciated.
I was gonna say, comparatively, so like the way, so like we said, how Manny does, you know, become Paige-ish at some point. Comparatively, like, Manny's trauma when she has her abortion and, you know, everyone talks about her and talks about how she's a slut, blah, 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 blah. We see that, like, that dip in confidence in Manny so viscerally. Like, it's literally so, like, so clear that it's like one day she's, you know, walking around with her thong out, and the next day she's wearing long sleeve jackets and not like she's like, it's a really clear visible change in Manny. But for Paige, it's way more of an internal change, and we don't see it, and we don't see her confidence get shaken much. Like, she still walks around the school the way she did before, basically.
No, and like, one of my favorite, like, so my favorite point with this plot is when she basically tells Ashley off and is like, don't write these songs about things that you don't know because you've never, and it's kind of, it's the first time she's ever spoken about it in like to other people and hadn't been keeping it all in, because she was acting really weird for a while.
Yeah, that part.
Which
Which, like, that's, so what happens is they're having a battle of the bands, and her band is singing a song that Ashley wrote, which was originally about losing your friends after taking ecstasy at a party. And
Right what you know.
Yeah. And then Ashley decides to change it after doing some research on the net, and change it and make it be about rape. And and from the perspective of a rape victim, which, like, mm-hmm. can you fucking imagine the having the gall to do that?
Well, not to get on, not to ever defend Ashley Kerwin on a podcast, especially when it's Paige Michael Jackson
on my podcast,
on your podcast specifically, mm-hmm. when teenagers who really are just starting out and believe that they have the right to speak on everything because it's the first time they've ever learned about something, mm-hmm. they mm-hmm. go at it with a fucking hammer. And yeah. there's yep. They really wrote this well because Ashley is not meaning to
no.
be the worst person alive, but she also doesn't know that the strongest person at her school, the definitive, this is the mm-hmm. boss, not the principal, she is.
Yeah.
That's the person in the room who has experienced that firsthand. No mm-hmm. one would expect Paige for that to happen to her. And right. so obviously I can talk about my song to Paige because Paige, mm-hmm. why would she care?
And that's
cool about the episode is that they wrote it really well.
And Ashley, mm-hmm. in Ashley's mind, she's like, Paige wants us to win the Battle of the Bands and we're going to do it with the most
shocking,
the most
affecting,
effective. Yeah. Like song where, but mm-hmm. with, you know, which is the important thing about things like trigger warnings, which is like, hey, you can't just pull that shit out because you don't know who's in yeah. the room. You don't know who is going to be affected by that, especially something as clear as Ashley's song, Poor Thing. It slaps. We can at least admit Poor Thing slaps.
Poor Thing slaps. It's not that it doesn't slap. It's not about rape, which means that the slap is probably not.
Yeah.
It's not to go unprepared.
Yeah.
Like you're slapping with a hand that is not your own.
Ashley Kerwin grabbing a victim's hand and slapping someone going, this slapping is how you Dean make right us feel. That's not appropriate.
But yeah, I agree with everything you were saying, Daniel, about how they kind of approached it as like, oh, you wouldn't expect mm-hmm. like it would happen to Paige. And I'm wondering if they would go like, oh, I would expect it to happen to this right. person, but not you, Paige, right. because of this, this, and this.
Or even the people that would expect it to happen to Paige would expect it because of the way she dresses or the way she.
Yeah.
So, because right. Paige uses that as her own in her own brain to blame herself, being like, well, I dressed mm-hmm. so sexy when really the reality is she was dressed in literally like a long skirt yeah. and mm-hmm. like heeled sandals. She's like, oh, I dressed so that I could see him. I actively pursued him at this party. She used that to blame herself.
Well, and I think he used it against yeah. her, oh, too.
Yeah, he did.
And it really mm-hmm. is so creepy because she thinks she dressed sexy. We look at her and we still see a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
She dressed like a kid, and that, like, he wasn't a full-grown man, but he was.
He looked like one.
He sure did look like one. He sure did mm-hmm. decide to make a full-grown mm-hmm. man decision on a very visible child.
Yeah.
And yeah. that was another part that we were able to see, you know, we were introduced to just the idea of an attractive man who is older than you inviting mm-hmm. you into a scenario. Mm-hmm. And this is a scenario that a lot of people dreamed and fantasized about as, you know, yeah. budding teens. But this mm-hmm. is the scenario they warn you about. And they did it in a way that wasn't, I don't know, like bad Shakespeare villainously shot.
In comparison to how, like, 13 Reasons Why
yeah.
did it.
Yeah.
Is a very tasteful way
oh, yeah.
to do it. And, like,
it wasn't gratuitous.
It wasn't, like, artistic mm-hmm. or whatever. Yeah. Like, they were just like, no, this is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's done very tastefully. And I think it was super ahead of its time.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they don't, the only person who blames the victim is the victimizer.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, everyone was very supportive.
And all his
everyone
pals.
Was very supportive of who needed to be, whereas, I think.
Whereas, like, In a way, it's a little unrealistic, but that's also probably because we live in America and Canada's different.
Yeah.
Well,
I
also think that there was a necessity for, we needed to showcase how to respond. They used their hot money to have Degrassi be an after-school special. And so they wanted, you know, there was, I remember the scene with Hazel where she basically outlines what you're supposed to do. Like you should tell somebody, all that stuff. And they model an appropriate response. And they did it in a way that, you know, it was not the most subtle scenes in the world.
Yeah, no.
But modeling the appropriate behavior of how to respond is very important. And we also don't want your main cast of people to be the people who responded poorly to the rape plot.
Oh, yeah.
The first time around, you know?
Yeah, which, like, is so interesting because they do that with, like, the Islamophobia plot. They're, like, really not afraid to make Spinner be
They're not afraid to make Spinner a whole host.
Spinner!
Yeah.
Oh, doesn't Spinner call her a slut?
Yes, but this is before he learns that she was raped. This is when he thinks that she just blew him off to go be with Dean.
Yeah.
To go blow someone,
how they sort of slipped in how people respond poorly without knowing all the information, which was very smart.
Yeah, very, very smart. Yeah. But yeah, like that, I
think that's probably one of her biggest moments, and it was I when Keely asked which one I wanted to talk about, I was like this one,
yeah, because it is her biggest moment.
Yeah, and like I love me some Paige Michael Chuck. And that moment probably changed her character.
Yeah, it completely definitely did. It 100% did. Like, we can even tie this back to why she dates Mr. Oleander. Like, we can tie this back to why she flunks out of college.
Yeah.
We can tie this back to a lot of things in her future that they don't, like, it's like with the thing with Emma, like, they don't explicitly say that this trauma could have led to this moment, but it certainly could.
And it certainly informs every other aspect of her life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Even if it doesn't directly cause it, it certainly informs how she behaves moving forward.
So would you like to hit your first plot point, Daniel?
Yeah. So getting back to the point of, even though nothing, we never explicitly state that Paige's trauma causes other things to happen, but it certainly does inform a lot of things. And her experience at Banting is indicative to really one of her deeper problems, which is she has to prove that she's better at everything to everyone. And I don't know who needs to hear this, but if you're planning on going to college, make sure you're doing it for you.
Yep.
Not for your parents, not because your high school teacher with the English degree who's very, very stressed about making sure that his degree matters, tells you that you'll do nothing but serve fries if you don't go to college. Like, if they're really using scare tactics to make you go,
then maybe you don't have to go.
Yeah. It's, there are many, many, many paths that are all valid as long as you make a plan, and that plan is achievable. And with Paige, with a lot of people, I know I fell into this trap of, I have to get into the most rigorous program and I have to be the best. I have to get on top of everything and do every, and make sure that everyone knows.
Be the best
I can be. And, you know, we run into the problem of, we get into all of this rigorous program and climb all the ladders we can, and we've driven ourselves crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
Because she's in a classroom environment where she's stressed so much that she can't achieve anymore. And she feels like she peaked in high school.
Right.
The big fear is that, oh no, I peaked and I was in high school. This is not good. And no one expected Paige Michael Chuck to fail at college, which is, of course, why we decided to spring that reveal again. And I wish that when I had watched this episode, I would have paid more attention when I was in high school. Because I totally see parallels, you know, where you, something bad happens to you, you internalize it, and you become determined to make sure everyone knows that you are going to be perfect from now on. Right. The bad thing that happens to you in life, that happened, you don't get to have another one. And so when she's stressed out and she's spiraling and, you know, she holds herself to these standards that she wouldn't dare hold to anyone else to.
Right, right.
And that's very, very relatable. And it's very, very, when I watched it last summer with you, Keely, and we sort of did that, it was spooky, her processes, because she goes home to her family and lies through her teeth.
Yeah.
Everything's fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely same. I was getting straight A's. No one knew that, oh no, he's not getting straight A's. Her professors are wondering where you are.
Yeah.
you don't show up to your makeup final. Oh, not ditching the makeup final.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't have to read me this hard from the past. Yeah. You didn't have to do that. And that I realized, like, you know, it's this kind of failure, this kind of, you know, crash that sets her up to go into an industry that she actually wanted to go into, that she was interested in going into, which was, you know, she had to do the dirty work to get through the door there, which was equally rigorous.
Yeah.
But it's rigor she was good at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was something that, you know, a very complex message to send a bunch of kids is that, you know, it's not don't pursue rigor. It's not don't go into something that's difficult because it's worth it. It's make sure that the work is worth it and that you want to actually go down that path.
Yeah. Yep. It's I think it's important to point out that she didn't even fucking know why she wanted to go to Banting. Like,
exactly.
It was just like, oh, I'm going to Banting. And it's like, well, why? And it's like, because my mom went there. Yeah. And they're like, well, what does Banting offer you? And she's like, Banting? Like, that's pretty much what goes on. And then when in that episode, when Banting comes to the school on like college day or whatever, and she and Alex get high, and she makes a fool of herself in front of the Banting recruitment officer, whatever she is. she's like, look, I don't fucking know what my goals are. And like, that's scary when you're 17. Cause like when I was in high school, I thought I was like, I lived my entire high school life assuming on the assumption that I was going to apply to colleges my junior year and then go. And then my parents sprung really late on me that's not a feasible goal. They were like, oh, well, you think you're going to college? That's fucking funny because you don't have straight A's, which I had basically straight A's. I had a 3.8 GPA. And they were like, well, you don't have straight A's and you don't have any extracurriculars. Mm-hmm. Like, why do you think you're going to a university? And that broke me. I was like, what? And then it turned out to be a blessing because I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I had gone to a four-year university, I don't know what I would have gone in as. Like, I don't know what my major would have been. And like, that's what, like, that whole thing for Paige was like, she had no plan. She had no vision of her future. All she saw for her future was success, and that success was measured in a college degree from her dream school.
I remember my parents, I got two different things. So I had my parents who were like, oh, you should go to school and become a teacher, because I'd mentioned it once that I wanted to be a teacher. And then I had all of my, like, my drama teachers, my English teacher, like, all of the people who are involved with theater in some way were like, no, you need to go audition and you need to go, like, pursue this as a career and blah, blah, blah. And I'm now, just now graduating from a community college. And I finally figured out what I wanted to do with my life without having these people constantly telling me what I should do and what I what they where they think I am. And like now, like, I'm super excited to be able to open my own practice in the future.
Yeah. And, yeah, definitely.
And it's really the it's also weird that Keely's discussed this all the time. This is her idea of we really can't give a young woman a clear collegiate path anymore on this show.
On this fucking show. She thinks she's got goals. Bitch, you thought.
Turns out you have to ride a bike and you have to become a personal assistant. Mm-hmm. And no one's getting degrees on this show.
No.
And while I understand, like, that trend was a little sus, but also because it was Paige, you weren't just speaking to the young women of the world. You were speaking to the young gays. And we weren't trying to let Marco Del Rossi flunk out of college. Right. Although I would have also seen that for him, too.
Oh, yeah. I could see that. Yeah.
His anxiety. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
And that's like, actually, thank you for saying that word, because that is something that we as a fandom don't discuss a lot, which is the fact that Paige Michalchuk has an anxiety disorder and, like, it's never named or anything, but she's shown in multiple situations at that time having various panic attacks, anxiety attacks, clutching her chest, breathing hard, all that good stuff. It was one of the first times that I had ever seen that represented, like, on television from a character that previously, like, that wasn't a part of her life before, right? Like, I had never seen a character develop an anxiety disorder right in front of me and be able to recognize those symptoms and be like, oh my God, why? Wow. I'm seeing Paige do something that happens to me quite often. And it, especially when I was a teenager, like, that was.
And it was very interesting because I also, the first time I had watched it when I was a teenager, I was like, this is unrealistic. Mm-hmm. This woman does not behave this way. Right. And then come to find out when you grow a little bit older and things happen to you and, oh yeah, no, you can develop disorders at any time.
Yeah. You can set your dorm on fire whenever you fucking want.
Right.
Whenever you want to, ma'am, you can set that dorm on fire. You can do it. Live your best life.
Remember when Paige almost committed arson?
No, she committed arson.
Well, in the building didn't catch fire.
Yeah, well, it was arson that was interrupted. It was an interrupted arson.
And then the RA was like, "You sure you don't have any candles in here? What happened?" And she's like, "My computer exploded."
Yeah, which was a viable excuse in the early 2000s because computers were weird and scary.
Yep, definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
And so I was very appreciative, especially during this rewatch. I loved watching someone, because yes, it was a failure, but also she was released from the expectations that turns out only she was holding over her head.
Yeah.
When she told her mom the truth, her mom was supportive.
Yeah.
Because as someone who often held himself to standards, because my parents are incredible, the moment I actually spoke those words aloud to them, they were horrified because they had never said the words, you have to go to a prestigious university and be the top of your class. All they wanted was, we want you to be successful and happy and not starve to death.
Right.
From what her family life looked like, 'twas only overachievers in that home. Yeah. Dylan set the precedent, but Paige really... when it looked like she didn't have to play the comparison game too much, but certainly at that Thanksgiving dinner, it was a nightmare where everyone was achieving and doing well. It was interesting to see that color on her. It was interesting to see how she responded. And I really loved how she grew from that. And she still retained her personality.
Yeah.
There was just different shades to it. And I loved that.
Mm-hmm. And I love, how the, like, I've got my opinions on where Paige ends up in her send-off on the series, which, like, I'll get to eventually. But, like, I've got my opinions on that. However, it is important to show that, first of all, like, what we learned from what you just discussed was, you know, expecting a 17-year-old girl or anybody, a 17-year-old person, to know what they want to do for the rest of their life when they're 17, 18 years old is absolutely ludicrous. Because you've only been on this earth for less than 2 decades. And it's important to show that people can have various different careers in in their lifetime and have them all be as viable as the one before. Because like she goes into fashion and then she, so like she takes being a fashion assistant and then turns that into being a Hollywood assistant, which turns out to not be for her, but like she's making the rounds with things that she wants to do. And with the, like, we all know that Paige from the beginning wants to be, you know, around where the high life is. Well, she wants to be known and around, like, you know, celebrities, which, you know, being a fashion assistant, being a Hollywood assistant, those are both aiming toward her goal. And so it's like, I think it's important to show that people can have different careers, different jobs, and the same interests and loves at the same time.
Yeah.
And then the next chronologically would be my next plot point, which was the HIV scare.
Okay, we all know how, I don't know if we all know how I feel about this, but in season 7, what happens, Daniel?
Well, what happened was, they have to audition a new roommate, and this roommate is a very attractive black man, and then she hooks up with him, she finds his meds, and then the ensuing conversation is, dude,
What the fuck?
And it's like, there's so many things wrong with this. There's so many different layers wrong with this. And, you know, as I said before, the inverse of, you know, the college dropout plotline could have happened to Margo. I would have seen it. I'm so glad they didn't do this to Margo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because as a gay, just out in the world, flitting around. The AIDS plot line is one that we are used to seeing.
Yeah.
So at least they didn't do that. They had the forethought to not do that to Marco. But good God, discovering the meds. Not discovering the meds and realizing you've been exposed to HIV.
Like, it was just, I think that's why they gave this to Paige, because it's like women specifically women, like, we don't think about that very often, you know? Like, we don't think that, like, it's been so ingrained in the world's brain. HIV AIDS is a gay men problem.
Like Western women are not really versed in that.
Exactly.
They're not involved in that conversation, which they really should be.
Yeah, like, women, we don't think about it that much. Like, you know, we think, you know, oh, somebody gave us a, as Emma so lovingly calls it, a social disease. HIV AIDS is like so far from our brains that like, and Griffin did not get this HIV in any nefarious kind of way. He was born with it, right?
Yeah. And that's and that's another thing is that, you know, he didn't get this by a quote unquote doing something immoral.
Yeah.
He got it because his mother had it.
Yeah.
And so he's absolved of the moral guilt of getting HIV, which a lot of people get it. But then the twist is that he didn't tell his sexual partner.
Like, what
is the most immoral thing to do when you have a disease? Is to tell someone.
And like, and Griffin, and okay, and this is where we get to the point where it's like everyone knows my opinions on this because I yell about this all the time. Paige never. We never see Paige on screen find out that she does not indeed have HIV. Like, we never get that resolution. We just end the episode on Griffin and Paige being like, well, gotta go get tested now.
Yeah, and then that's how the episode make up. Ends.
And they make up, and then they're, like, still dating.
Yeah, and to be frank, to be honest, we were really going with, you know, like, because he was afraid that she would be interested in him if he was sick. And we don't know if she would have.
Right.
We don't know. We don't know the answer to that. However, we just kind of was like, yeah, we're trying to make someone with HIV a straight man and have that, you know, be a topic and show not all people who have HIV are who you think you are.
Exactly.
Also, it's not always a moral thing, whatever. It's very, very hard to encapsulate all that in a half an hour plot line.
Where
you only get half of a half an hour.
Yeah.
A quarter hour, if you will.
I cannot stop thinking about how, so when Paige finds the meds, she looks at it and I swear to God, she it's AZT. She looks at it and she's like, AZT, what are those letters? And I, in my heart of hearts, I'm like, Paige, do you know the musical Rent?
Yeah.
Have you and Dylan watched Rent together?
AZT break. Oh,
wait
no.
a second.
He, when he
that.
Rawed me, I didn't think it would cause this problem.
Which
oh,
I don't,
dear.
I don't think he rawed her, did he?
I don't know if he did or didn't.
I think they did use a condom.
Yeah, but you know how you don't use a condom for everything. Everyone raws in the mouth.
No!
we never get the answer to Paige's question. She never offhandedly mentions afterwards, like, oh, and by the way, I'm HIV positive. Yeah. As an HIV negative woman, may I speak on
it
this issue
been
that this
so
high school
easy.
Is having?
It would have been so easy to just toss it in, but nope.
How would you toss it in? I would love to know.
Just what you said.
As an HIV negative woman, can I jump in?
Yes. All right. After having my brush with HIV.
After having my scare. Oh God. And HIV is not a laughing matter. People have
no.
it. And
yeah.
And they're not untouchable freaks or whatever. They're people. And
yeah.
It's
and
fine.
That's what I like about, like, it is bizarre to me that Paige and Griffin do continue to date after this, but I like it. Like, I'm like, you know, it's not.
Yeah, it's the line. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was just about to say. It's about the fact that he lied.
Yeah,
better.
That's the part that's bizarre to me.
Like, mm-hmm. And it's bonkers to me, especially, like, coming from a polyamorous point of view. We all know I was going to say it at some point. I make sure my partners are tested mm-hmm. before, because it's about my sexual health and my safety. Like, it's not going to change the fact that I want to sleep with you.
Right.
It's just, I need to know for my safety. So when one of my partners hadn't communicated that they had started sleeping with another partner, I was like, so you didn't tell me this, whether it was on accident or on purpose or whatever.
Right.
You're still putting my sexual health at risk, and that's not okay.
Yeah,
like, exactly.
And if we were rewriting this plot for today, we would probably have a better understanding of how to not make Griffin the enemy, because that's not productive.
No.
But it's also like, you know, he did something wrong and he should.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't have kicked him out of the house, but maybe
hold him accountable at least.
Hold him accountable and mm-hmm. like have a scene, I don't know, reference that, you know, we're taking things slow. I still need to get some trust from him, and he still needs to work on his issues with trusting me, because he didn't trust me with that information.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lack of trust there that, you know, I'm sure we could have played with a little better.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Trust is so, so hard to get, but so easy to take away.
Yeah. That's a great quote. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can then move on to our last plot point before we move on to ships, which is just to talk about Paige's send-off. Now, we are not the only people in the world who think Paige was done dirty with how she was sent off. Everyone thinks so. Lauren Collins and Adama Ruggiero are very vocal about how they were like, this is bullshit. So in the award-winning film Degrassi Goes Hollywood, Paige is kind of, she's not the catalyst of the whole film, but like so we follow her to Hollywood. She's already there. Degrassi Goes Hollywood, Paige is already there. Which is such a Paige thing to do. Like, everyone's going Hollywood. Oh,
she's
already here.
I'm here, bitches.
Yeah. But she's been the assistant to a, like, reality TV star. Like, she's an heiress lady, like a very Kim Kardashian, Paris Hilton type. And Paige is her personal assistant. And she hates her job. She hates it. She's like, I hate it here. I want to do something else. She's being like, you know, taken advantage of every day by her boss. And she then gets the opportunity to be in Musical High, which is the Jason Mewes film that they are filming. And she's like, oh, well, I know Kevin Smith. I know Jason Mewes. I can get myself in here. And she does. And for a while there, she is their leading lady. And then Manny takes it from her, which, you know, is their whole relationship. and Paige, it's just the whole film we spend with Paige, who we have watched go through so much. Like, we watched her go through so much development of being like, oh, I'm a mean girl. I'm a queen bee. I've gone through my own problems. I now, you know, I'm more empathetic, yada, yada, yada. We watch her go through that whole arc.
I'm such an empath.
Yeah. We go through that whole arc with her and only to watch her regress and be 14 again and be like, let Hollywood and fame get to her head, which I guess is a big part of when these shows in the early 2000s, quote unquote, going Hollywood was such a big thing. And that's always a plot point, is somebody goes Hollywood and the fame gets to their head, but like, could it not have been somebody else?
yeah.
It could have
nuanced.
It could have easily been Manny Santos.
Oh, 100%. Like, yeah. We had to watch, like, Degrassi Goes Hollywood, we have to watch Manny, like, climb from the underdog position of that film, while Paige is the, like, the mean person, the bitchy person that is just making Manny's life difficult. But it's like, it's like, how was this necessary? Meanwhile, Ellie's over here having her own, like,
having her own like mental breakdown.
Yeah. Well, it almost she shouldn't have been in this movie. This sounds like something that could have been done somewhere else.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like, Paige is like, Ellie's over here trying to drown herself while Paige is sipping martinis by the pool, like, oh my, get me another you know, like,
fetch me my Jimmy Choo flip flops.
Exactly. And it's
where is my pink Prada tote?
And it's like, what? And then, like, they ruin her friendship with Marco in the end, because he calls her out on her shit and she punches him. She slaps him right in the face. And then they don't make up at the end. And for years between seasons 8 and then season 2, 3 of Next Class, we are led to assume that Paige and Marco's friendship just ends there. And we don't get any resolution on that. And that is absolute bullshit.
It was very lazy storytelling. And like, you know, there is something to be said of like, I won't assume the role of devil's advocate, but I will say,
very white man of you.
Very, very, very white man of me. But if we were going to keep the fucking Paige loses her head, whatever. It would have there's a more nuanced way to do it, where it's like, she finally has achieved back to quote unquote the way things were supposed to be, which is, I'm back on top.
Yeah.
Where she has to face all of this growth of, I've been clawing my way, I've been secondhand, I've been assisting, I've been failing and growing through adversity, and now I'm being given what I had originally planned on at 13.
Right.
Am I going to respond the way a 13-year-old would respond?
Right. Definitely. I see that 100%.
And I think if we were going to execute that in a way that was a little more, we would have to give more time to her.
Give more time to her as an assistant, and show how like belittled she feels and how demeaning that job was.
How she probably feels like helpless, like she was when she was 13.
Right.
Yeah. And it also would have probably helped had she come to the realization that, you know, even when she gets to where she wants to be, she realized her behavior, the way that she can't go through with it anymore because she's a different person now. And also, Manny's right for the part.
Yeah.
And she's not.
Right.
And someone who knows the business and someone who sort of runs through, she'd know that.
Exactly.
And I think that would have been a better way to do it. But like, I don't know. Do you guys?
I agree.
Yeah. If you had to rewrite this plot point, Keely, since this is your plot point, what would you have fixed? It's bullshit.
Yeah, like I would have kept Marco out of the equation 100, like entirely. Had this be just a Paige and Manny plot, and did exactly what you just said. Play up the like Paige feels like she has been demoted to, because that's also an interesting thing that we haven't touched on, which is her career path as an assistant now twice. It's totally challenging everything she's known as a high school student, and she's willing to take that corporeal pay cut, if you will, if the pay mm-hmm. is popularity, to get her goals. But like, we don't really get to see her. Like, she still behaves like the Paige that we know. Mm-hmm. We don't get to really see her be as diminished as one feels. Like, we've all worked in situations where we feel completely helpless and like completely like people are just stepping on us and shitting on us every moment of every mm-hmm. day. And I would not carry myself the way Paige was carrying herself.
Nope.
if I were being, you know, reduced to the woman who like washes this lady's dog or whatever. So yeah, I would definitely like strip that down a little bit, make it more of an internal thing, make it less shallow, and make it more of a Paige and Manny thing. Play with the hierarchy that we've seen them competing over for seasons now. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And then I would make them make out.
Yeah, lovely. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just frenemies.
Frenemies. No, frenemies to lovers, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
she didn't just go through that arc.
So that, I guess that's a great lead-in into ships, is it not?
That's fantastic, yes. Actually. Fantastic.
Hell yeah.
So who should we hit first? We gotta hit... So
we have to hit Spinner first.
Spage first, which...
Oh, Spage.
People really, really are married to Spage, and I do not understand. I do not get it one lick.
Because it's nostalgia. It's the Kraft's mac and cheese of ships. It's not good, but it's your childhood, so you want it to happen.
And it's, you know, it's not bad either. Like, they're never bad for each other.
Yeah.
It's just the boring choice.
Yeah. We also just don't understand it.
Yeah. We discussed this before, where Spinner is a giant baby for two seasons. And Paige is the coolest girl in school over here, like, oh, that's the guy that I want to be with. And it's like, why? Because he's not like he's cool, but like, because he bullies people, you know?
Yeah, she likes the power of it.
One thing I do love about their relationship is indeed, like, after that trauma happens, after she crashes his car into Dean's car, and he is so understanding about it and sweet that she then has to get a job to help pay for Spinner's car, and to pay him off. And that's how she and Alex get together, which, like, hey, Spinner's over here being everybody's unintentional wingman. but, yeah, like, and then there's that point in like season 5, 6.
Where they relapse back into Spage for half a second.
Where they relapse. It's five. Right before, because he cheats on Darcy with her.
Yeah.
And like there's that moment, which I think solidifies to me, like, that they aren't meant to be together. Cause she uses and they relapse again after that.
Season six,
when Ellie is dating Jesse, which, like, by the way, we have to put Jesse on this fucking list too.
She does date him.
Ellie and Jesse have broken up, and Paige is like, "I'm just gonna play the field. I'm just, you know, I'm a modern woman. I'm just playing the field." And she's dating Jesse and Spinner at the same time.
And two boys.
Well, she's dating Jesse, but like hooking up with Spinner is the thing. And Spinner thinks that they're back together.
Yeah. And honestly, at that point, who wouldn't want to fuck Spinner? He's in his prime.
Peak Spinner. Oh, season six. It was good. Season six was good for everybody.
Yeah. That was a nice time to be alive. Mm-hmm. Everyone was looking Sean real was hot. Good.
Sean was hot. Spinner was hot. Jay was hot. Who else was hot in season two?
The girls were all pretty hot, too.
The girls were all hot.
They were working it. That, like, mm-hmm. Paige was looking real good. Manny was looking real good.
Emma was looking real good.
Emma was looking real good. Ellie was serving.
I loved Ellie's, like, fashion that season.
Mm-hmm. Also, Marco was looking really good, too. Mm-hmm. He had gone through most of his toxic hair journey, yeah. I think.
Yeah, everyone was looking real good in season six. Yeah, so, like, I understand.
Yeah, go on, fuck everybody. Go on, do it. You go do it. I understand
the Spage relapse then. But, like, yeah, like, other than that, they're pretty boring. They're pretty, they're pretty milquetoast as a couple. And they call each other Honeybee a lot, which was cute. Oh, we haven't discussed Hun. She's got such she's the only cast member, she's the only character on this show that has, like, a catchphrase that stays.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Paige is the only one with the catchphrase. She's the only one with the really fun trope of being a wise woman sage in a bathroom.
In a bathroom. My favorite.
Mm-hmm. Paige, the bathroom sage.
Yep.
She did that for us all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what else? So, like, that was Spage, because she's got quite a few ships that we can
We gotta run through, because so much of her character is through her relationships, mm-hmm. because she goes through them.
So next would be one Mr. Matt Oleander.
Mr. Oleander.
He was a teacher, right?
Yeah, he was a student teacher. Which, okay, yes, student teacher, and yes, yucky. But we do have to give the caveat that he is the same age as Dylan, and Dylan was dating Marco at the same time. So yes. Matt Oleander's only 19. Paige is only 17. Matt is not that old. It's not creepy predatory in that way.
It's all power dynamic.
Yes, it's all power dynamic. It's inappropriate. And he's also a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
It's built up in a way that they want us to ship them. And then everything blows up.
Yeah, there are picnics
up.
And there are...
There are picnics. There's sexy sneaking around.
It's very Pretty Little Liars, Ezra. Mm-hmm. And
except
her name
Ezra
vibes.
Was a full teacher. Ezra was not a student teacher. Ezra was 23. anyway.
It's fine. Everything is fine.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, obviously, we cannot ship Paige and Matt.
Do you think that was just kind of like an out? I don't. Is outlier the right word?
I think so.
For to set up Palix.
Ooh,
a
misdirect.
Yeah, like a red herring.
A red herring.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because
that's when. So that's when Paige was working at the. At the movie theater, mm-hmm. with Alex.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they were playing the long game with Paige and Alex. Yeah. Which is the most lesbian way to do it. And
yes.
Mm-hmm. It's so great.
Mm-hmm. Just, we're not there yet. We're going to get there.
Because if you rewatch it, the entire time Alex is like, why the fuck are you doing this?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's
definitely.
Very true.
And this
it's
is
a
what...
very men ain't shit vibes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's where they kind of start setting up the friendship that eventually leads to something romantic.
Right, right. Yeah, definitely. I see that. Because that's when she starts, like, confiding in Alex. Mm-hmm. And Alex is her voice of reason. Yeah, I totally see that as a setup.
Are we transitioning to...
We could, yeah. I would like to hit Palix last.
Okay.
So we can skip Alex for now. And then, go straight to, like, the one-off boys, like, yeah, Jesse, so we already hit Griffin, basically, but yeah.
Jesse, piece of shit.
Jesse's
just a piece of shit in general.
And they,
if you don't know this, go back to the Ellie episode, yes. where I first appeared.
Yes, Jesse fucking sucks. And they use him as a way of like pitting Ellie and Paige, not against each other, but just like putting them in the same playing field, which they had never been in previously. Like they were like, oh, in high school, Ellie's going to date guys like Sean and Paige is going to date guys like Spinner. And there's no overlap here. But then in college, all bets are off. all bets are off, babe. You can be a punk girl, a goth girl, and get the same guy as the most popular girl in your high school. And that is more telling of the girls and their relationship than it is about the guy.
Who was equally shitty the whole time.
Yeah, Jesse fucking sucks the whole time. He and Paige do some like sexy dancing at a club together. That's all I remember about them. And she really only uses him to like be like, I'm playing the field. I'm a modern woman. Who says I can't date two people at once? And like that whole thing.
Where again, like the polyamory would fix everything.
The Michael Chucks and their polyamory, man.
Yeah, right? The Michael Chucks, honestly, you know, they weren't just gay together. They were poly together.
I wonder if Mr. and Mrs. Michael Chuck were poly.
They're swingers.
Were polyamorous.
They've got the pineapple.
Paige Meeklechuk's mom.
Mr. and Mrs. Meeklechuk are swingers. They like they're classic swingers. Like they bring the key. They go to the key parties. They put the pineapple on the porch. They are
the pineapple on the porch. I forgot.
Is it on the porch or in the window? I've only heard about this recently. Yeah, they put the pineapple in the window.
But pineapple on the porch sounds like a fun one act that a student wrote in college that they really cared about.
Pineapple on the porch about
a bunch of swingers.
Mm-hmm. And oh my god!
It's like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, but with swingers.
So like we've established Paige and the men that she dates, the men ain't shit. Like Spinner, like he's the ain't shit that we love a whole fucking lot, but he still ain't shit.
I think all of the men that she's dated, he's the one who can keep up with her the most.
Yeah. But it's like just imagining like Paige, if Paige and Spinner had ended up together, that would have just been like what? it wouldn't have made sense like as they grew. Mm-mm. Like they made more sense as younger high schoolers.
Well, we all know that Ellie and Paige ended up marrying each other and having a million cats.
100%.
And ferrets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, like Paige and Spinner really grew out of each other. And then it became increasingly clear that she was only using him in, you know,
in the
physical way, in all those like times after they fully broke up. Did she break up with him over the shooting? Were they together during the shooting?
Oh, I think...
I don't think so.
I think they had broken up, but they were on good terms. And then they weren't.
Yeah, or you know what? You know what I think it was? I think Paige and Spinner broke up when Spinner was flirting with Manny. And he fought Craig at the movie theater. over Manny and not Paige. And Paige was like, you're fighting over someone who's not me. We're over. Because that was when Spinner was being an asshole about her working at the movie theater. Because like it was at first really sweet when she had gotten that job. And, you know, was like, you know, I'm going to pay off your car. I'm so sorry. And he was like, it's okay. Like, totally do that. But then it got to his head. And he was like, ooh, I'm holding this over her. Now I can do whatever the fuck I want. And that's really a pattern we see in these boys on this show.
Mm-hmm. You give them an ounce of power and all of a sudden we really do love making women suffer.
So now we can move on to my literal, like I will go on record as saying that Paige and Alex are my favorite ship on this goddamn show. They are my favorite ship. No ship has ever come close to Paige and Alex. And they were done the dirtiest.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, absolutely. Like, for all that buildup just to off them in a weird one-off episode.
Mm-hmm. Ridiculous. Like, I will say, like, Sav and Holly J had some shitty, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, they were done dirty, but no one was done dirtier than Paige and Alex. They played the long game with Paige and Alex because, like, they plant the seeds early. They have them work in the same place. They have them hate each other for a little while. And we really get to see them grow from enemies to friends to lovers, mm-hmm. and then kind of back to friends and then back to enemies a little bit, which mm-hmm. is absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, like we really see the most beautiful blossoming of this ship for over a season. Like it starts when they start working together, and then it grows, and then it all culminates when Paige and Alex go to the movie premiere, the Kevin Smith movie premiere, and Alex utters one of my favorite lines on the whole series that absolutely makes me cry, is when they are at the after party and Alex and Paige have been dancing and making everything like everyone like turning all the eyes and turning all the heads, and everyone's like, oh my god, who are those two girls dancing with each other the whole night? And Jay goes, what makes you think this night is about you anyway? And Alex goes, it's not, it's about her.
Yeah.
Which it kills me. That's every time.
Yeah, I love that.
It's so cute. It's so sweet. And then that's when you realize Alex is head over heels in love with Paige. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they kiss later that night. And Paige has to have her whole like
gay panic
and be like, oh, well, everything's fine. We're fine. Friends kiss. But you know, she obviously felt something there, and but you know, she has to come to terms with her own sexuality at that point, because she's like, wait, like I don't know that I like that I am interested in women, which turns out she is. We never see her interested in another woman, but that's a spectrum of you know, the yeah. LGBT rainbow that is yep. that's valid. Like, you can love one woman and still identify, which by the way, Paige never identifies. She never says what she is.
She's too cool for labels.
Yeah, she doesn't like labels.
Yeah. Which was very in back then.
Very in.
Yeah, we don't have to name it. Love is love. I don't have mm-hmm. to label anything. It's not important for any reason whatsoever.
Like, Daniel was here when I remembered that Lindsay Lohan dated Samantha Ronson in the early 2000s, and Lindsay never, you know, came out, quote unquote, came out. She was just dating Samantha Ronson.
That's funny.
Yeah. And
that so, yeah, tracks like, for her.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we saw for Paige. That's probably that probably greatly affected how they wrote Paige, was that whole early 2000s vibe of being like, you can love who you love, and you don't have to be gay.
Just because you're gay doesn't mean you have to be gay.
Yeah.
You know? Just because you're
doing gay things doesn't mean that you're gay. Yeah. You can put your mouth on that girl's mouth, and no labels, man. Labels are for soup cans.
That's not what I thought you were gonna say, but yeah.
you can slowly grow a relationship based on mutual communication and trust and friendship, and then kiss her right in the mouth. It doesn't mm-hmm. be gay.
No, yeah, like
mom
yeah,
have just, to be bisexual.
Just
about
wear
it.
Your cowboy hat to the party and and let people wonder. Like, it's nobody's fucking business. but yeah, so and then so like we get to see this beautiful relationship. Paige and Alex are very on and off. Like, it's a very like. Usually it's Alex is all in and Paige is like, whoa, 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 wait. And that's commitment. Kind of the, yeah, that's kind of the journey they go on.
That's also the Michael Chuck way.
Yes. Which, when do Paige and Alex break up before graduation? Like, what sends Paige back into the arms of Spinner?
Well,
I'm going to look at it on the wiki.
Isn't this, she gets high and banting thing happens and she says, I'm going to focus on my schoolwork, and then they have the whole I'm going places and you're not conversation.
Yes that is, which is so funny, because then when Paige comes back in season 6 and Alex is doing remarkably well in school, and then suddenly the roles are reversed and Paige is like, well, turns out like I broke up with you for nothing. And because I'm now the one who's not going places and you're the one who's got the highest marks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they get to have that kind of role reversal, which then leads them back into each other's arms. Cause Alex she just can't not not want the best for Paige. And she shows it every single time. They get back together right before Alex becomes a stripper, which Don't You Want Me Parts 1 and 2 are, I have gone on record as saying they are my favorite episodes of the series. Yeah. Because they are very good and well-constructed. But, yeah, and then the thing that pains my heart the most is when season 7 rolls around and they were like, we need to write Deanna Casalucci off of the show. So we're going to make Alex basically regress back to her high school self again. And we are going to make her not be going places and make her not respect Paige's line of work and have her just be the worst fucking person alive and then have Paige and Alex break up.
Yeah.
And that is just not fair. And it's just not fair to send Alex off that way. It's not it's not a fair way to end the most well done ship that's ever been done on this show. Like it's just not fair.
Mm-mm. And yeah.
I will die mad about it.
How would you fix it?
Well, I would have them break up for a valid reason. Like, this was obviously a valid reason, but it wouldn't be something that...
Because, like, Alex regressed rather.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't have changed
Alex. Yeah, an honest character reason.
Exactly. Like, maybe Alex goes away to school and they don't want to do long distance. Like, that's fine enough right there. Or, yeah. Like, maybe even, like, they do introduce Alex like smoking weed again in this episode because she hangs out with Jay, and even like her friendship with Jay, maybe have that come in between them. Like Paige is uncomfortable with her being friends with a fucking lowlife who got Jimmy shot. You ever just think about that? Like,
yeah,
you got all the flack.
Yeah, Jay over slid here, like, right into that radar and
Jay,
said no.
Jay was literally the one who suggested that they frame.
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely. Jay was
But only Spinner knows that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's how Paige and Alex ends, and it's not fair. And I'm very sad about it all the time.
Yeah.
But they really deserved way more than what they got, even though they had, like, What they did get was one of the most beautiful blossomings of a ship that I can think of on this show. So there's at least that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they gave it to a queer relationship between two women, which is something that we never get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
The slow burn that, you know, mm-hmm. wasn't broadcast, you know, unless you were looking for it, it could potentially take you by surprise.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, like a hot and steamy two hot girls making out mm-hmm, thing. It was a friendship. It treated them both with equal dignity until the end. And it portrayed a lot of real life problems with coming to terms with sexuality while having someone right next to you waiting.
Yes, mm-hmm. definitely.
Because it sucks when you have to come to terms with your own sense of self while mm-hmm. someone is sitting next to you waiting for you to get there.
Yeah, like I would love to have experienced this in real time as a teenager in 2006, being like, there's no way they're making Paige gay, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, be sitting there like, wait, what? Like, I would have loved to experience that in real time and just know, like, what teenagers thought about it mm-hmm. while it was happening.
That's vindication for a lot mm-hmm. of people.
Like, yeah, to see like could they have pinpointed it before? Were they in utter disbelief until it actually happened? Like that sort of thing. Like were they able to clock the clear seed settings? So yeah, like that was Paige's ships. We touched basically on her sexuality thing, which like mm-hmm. we touched on it as vaguely as Paige touches on it. So I think that's fitting.
Yeah.
So now all that's left to do is, when is the time that you guys were such a Paige?
I went first in the sentences, so
I know.
Gets to go first.
I know. I was such a Paige when I let other people's opinions of me
mm-hmm.
matter.
Yes.
Which is still kind of me today. Like,
mm-hmm.
like back to the whole college thing, like, I didn't know what I wanted to do with, like, schooling and stuff. And now that I don't have anybody to try and influence, that I finally found like my way, and like I've become this beautiful polyamorous bisexual queen that I am today, which is what should have happened to Paige. Maybe not the polyamory part, because as much as I would love to have polyamory in everyday, like, just spoken out more about it, especially in like social media, it's just, it's not for everybody. But I that's when I was such a Paige.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
Love that.
Thanks. Love that for me.
Yeah, I love that for you too. How about you, Daniel?
Oh God. I don't know. I was a Paige when I set very high bars for myself and met a lot of them until I didn't. And, you know, I had this idea of, you know, we have to have this perfectly constructed quip for everyone and, you know, fix other people's problems when they're not even in my subplot. What are you doing here?
Right.
But I'll go ahead and give unsolicited advice that you're going to have to learn anyway. And I felt like that was my job. And whenever that was threatened, I felt the need to defend myself in some unhealthy ways. And, you know, it's specifically like, I remember being first year at college, walking in and realizing that everyone had brand names on their clothing except for me. I was wearing my Costco jeans to an acting class, and someone pointed it out. And so I turned around and I said, well, I can fix my jeans, but you cannot fix your nose without a lot of money. And that was a really fun quip that I did. And then my acting teacher, I had taken three classes with him, and he said, you know, when you made that withering comment to that girl who was not insulting your jeans, she just referenced that it was a Kirkland brand, and you destroyed her in front of everyone. Maybe you need to open up with your emotions a little bit, because it's going to hinder you as a performer. And he was politely telling me, if you're going to be a bitch to people, you're not going to get any work. And you're also not going to be a very good performer. And I still struggle with that of, hey, be more emotionally available and not constantly on guard.
Right.
And, you know, just accept that not everything's a criticism, which she does. And I'm still working on that. But that's such an excellent one.
I love that.
Yeah.
I've been like racking my brain, and like, you know, there's times that I was an asshole, and there's times that I looked cute, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, I'm trying to really rack my brain, but I think one of my like, one of my most Paige-ish qualities is that I feel like Paige in her later years, in her, because like, honestly, like, Paige later on really hits differently than Paige early on. Like, she's a totally like, I feel like we can really divide her up into eras. And later on, Paige, I feel, puts a lot of her expectations on herself based upon what her younger self would want to see when she's older. And I think I do that a lot, or I used to do that a lot. And like, there are times when I will think back to like the 12, 13 year old me who had way more confidence before like my mom and like other people in my life decided to tell me that because I'm X, Y, and Z thing that I shouldn't be this confident. I will look back and think like, oh, how would she feel about who I am now? Whereas it's like, I, you know, Paige in season one, definitely wouldn't see her being anyone's assistant, right? Like, she would not see herself being dunked on by, what was her name? The actress lady, or the fashion lady. Like, she wouldn't see herself be dunked on twice in a row by two different women. Like, she wouldn't think that that's anything that she would ever subject herself to.
Yeah.
And like, I can look back and think like, oh, younger me certainly wouldn't want to be like, if I pictured myself 25 and a preschool teacher, I'm running my own classroom at least. Like, I'm not, you know, somebody's substitute. I'm not walking around. I'm not floating. I'm, you know, holding myself. I'm certainly, you know, I've got a boyfriend by now, but certainly, right? That's what 12-year-old me would have seen. And I, you know, you feel that disappointment of being like, you know, I'm letting that younger self down. But like what Paige learns to do and what I'm learning to do is, you know, don't live for the kid who hasn't even gone through all the shit that you've gone through. Mm-hmm. Like, do not live for that kid who had dreams that have not been that kid that had dreams that like haven't already been crushed in some way. And so, yeah, like that's kind of, I would say that that's kind of an abstract way that I am such a page where I'm like learning to look forward instead of beating myself up for not appeasing the kid within, you know. Well,
I would also say, I didn't know you at 13, but I knew you at 14. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the person I knew who I became best friends with, take you out of the equation, if she were given a laundry list of who you are right now,
right,
she'd defend you to her dying day.
Yeah.
Because that's who she was. Because mm-hmm. that's a trait that you and Paige both share on a day-to-day basis. You go to bat. Mm-hmm. Regardless if you were 13 and you had this idea of how your life is going to go, and then you went through a bunch of things and you're coming out now. I mean, you just had a realization the other day, you know, that you're far more interesting than half the people
who
try and sneak their way to the DMs with their office references and they're holding up the fish and skiing pictures.
Not to alienate anyone who likes The Office. I'm talking to someone right now who very much likes The Office, and I don't want to alienate him in case he listens to this.
Yeah, no alienation here, but you like you're coming into your own, and you're interesting, and you're fiercely loyal, and you do all these incredible things, and you also move plots forward. You're always doing something.
Mm-hmm.
You're a doer. So that's good.
I don't know about all that.
Well, yeah, and like back to what he was saying about you'd go to bat for like yourself. You'd also go to bat. I know you'd go to bat for me.
Yeah.
And I know totally. you'd do the same thing for Daniel. Like the one when I mentioned that I cried to that Taylor Swift song, you immediately were like, well, you should dump the guy that you can relate that to. And I was like, no, I'm just crying because it's an emotional song, Keely.
Time that I was such a page.
it's canonical you stood up for me. And it's canonical that Paige and Marco vibes all the way. We do it.
Yeah.
It's just...
Paige, Marco, Ellie.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a great... Thank you all. Thank you both for your kind fucking words.
they were very genuine, I promise.
And I guess that's a great place to like say that that's our episode.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. This was so much fun. We knew, we anticipated that this was going to be like
a long one.
A long one. We anticipated that we were going to have a lot of feelings. Mm-hmm. That's why we all wanted to do this one. Yeah, and that's our episode. Where can people find you guys on the social medias?
I'm Danny Boy Herman everywhere, for better or worse.
And you can find me at Golden Throat, where the C, where there's a C, where the first O would go.
Mm-hmm.
On any platform. I did another TikTok the other day.
And I'm at OMG It's Key across platforms. That's mostly Instagram and TikTok. And you can follow the podcast on Instagram at Cuckoo Bananas Podcast and email us at cuckoobananaspodcast@gmail.com. And thank you guys again for being here. We love it. We love the threesome.
Hell yeah.
The listeners love the threesome. Who do I have next week? I've got one Mr. Jay Hogarth, who we talked so lovingly about in this episode.
Oh, Jay. Jaybury.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I'm very excited. That tracks. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.